Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We have loads of wonderful people for you to meet today, between now and 4:30. We have Vanessa and Alex, two young people who've been diagnosed with cancer. I was just speaking to them outside. They're amazing and they have a great story to tell. Looking forward to speaking to them. Noah Reid. Now, fans of Shit Creek will know Noah Reid. He was the man who sang a version of Tina Turner's Simply the Best, or maybe it's just called The Best. He's an actor and a singer from Canada, where the programme was made, and he's coming in to chat and to sing for us. And then after 4 o'clock, Dermot O'Leary, star of stage, screen and author, of course, he has a new book out called Wings of Glory. He's left Toto the cat behind, and now he has Linus the Swift. And the story of Linus the Swift is based around the Battle of Britain. And coincidentally, that's in the news today because it's an anniversary tomorrow. And also because Group Captain John Hemingway, who's 104, who's a former Royal Air Force fighter pilot, was in his old school yesterday, St. Andrew's College in Booterstown, just up the road. He sounds like an amazing man and has an amazing story. He left St. Andrew's when he was 17. Hasn't been back since. He was 18 when he joined the RAF. And then 19 when he participated in the Battle of France. He'd barely turned 20 when the Battle of Britain happened. And in August of 1940, he was shot down twice within the space of 8 days. His son Brian was with me yesterday up in St. Andrews, and he answered many questions from, I think, the Leaving Cert history students. And he told them that his father was lucky to survive the war, but it was a luck born out of professionalism and experience. And he also told the pupils that they, the pupils, were the same age as his father when he risked his life during the Battle of Britain. Isn't that, you know, when you think of it like that, if you could move your thought processes away from some fighter pilot who's a top gun and remember he was basically your age. His longevity is a surprise to him too. He's 104. And then Brian said, wars are always fought by young people. And Dr. Carter, who's a teacher in St. Andrews, added, and started by older people. So there's a lesson. He left St. Andrews in 1936 and was delighted to be back at the age of 104. He was presented with a plaque featuring the school crest, which has not changed in the last 86 years, despite all the tumult. Anyway, so that's connected to Dermot O'Leary because he's written fiction, obviously, about a Swift involved in the war effort back in the 1940s. So that's the lineup. And Schitt's Creek, that's sort of, there's a connection to a story today, a survey. They were looking to find out what's the most popular sitcom in the world, in television history. I wonder, could you guess what came out on top? Maybe you would. The Office, the American version. Not the Ricky Gervais, David Brent version, but the Steve Carell, Michael Scott version. It has achieved significant success in the streaming era as well, with platforms like Netflix and Hulu. The Office US in particular has been a top streaming choice, and it was the most streamed show of 2020. So people during lockdown went back to watching The Office, and I suppose some people were watching it for the first time. So that was number one. Friends, which ran from 1994 to 2004, secured second place on the list. And other highly regarded sitcoms in the list of most popular sitcoms in television history in the world ever: Futurama, animation, The Big Bang Theory, Modern Family, big in our house, Seinfeld, was big in the other house, Ugly Betty, Rick and Morty, The Simpsons, big in our house, Brooklyn 99. But where is Schitt's Creek? You know, because, like, look, if you haven't seen it, I've recommended it here before, and I remember I recommended it during lockdown, and we got a ratty, but it's sort of a brief text from a woman the next day saying she was very disappointed in me that I'd recommended it. So you have to be careful about your recommendations, but I still stand over my recommendation of Schitt's Creek. And they're 20 minutes long, and it's very funny, and it has a big heart as well, a really big heart, and brilliantly acted. Yours Sincerely is dead, according to a survey, another survey conducted by Barclays. So it's roughly 300 years old. Is, you know, yours sincerely at the end of a letter or email. Yours sincerely, not at the end of a text. That'd be very odd. And it's just fallen out of favour because we live in a more informal world, don't we? Which I think is a good thing. Like the suit and the shirt and tie, less seen, isn't it? You know, you're looking even yesterday at the hearings there, and a lot of the TDs were in short sleeves rolled up and open collars. So formality is sort of waning, I think. And with it, yours sincerely is gone. Well, it's not gone completely, but it's dying off. It's dying off. So what do you sign off with instead? I don't sign off with anything. I don't know about you. I just go, you know, Ray or Ray Darcy, depending on how familiar I am with the person I'm communicating with. So, you know, so if you know somebody well, it's just Ray. And then if you just, it's a business type relationship, just go Ray Darcy. Some people just say regards. Others say best. Not best wishes or not best regards, just best. And you can fill in. It's like a little game of blankety blank. So how do you sign off your emails? And they point out there in The Guardian today, like if you were speaking face to face, you'd never end the conversation with regards or best or yours sincerely. You just wouldn't. But then, you know, communicating like that and communicating via email or letter is a different thing. I know how you like, you know, the gory enough stuff, and you like to hear statistics. I know you do, like me. You do. You're sort of half closing, covering your ears, but then you're going, oh, I want to listen. So, fruit flies. Great piece in the Irish Times today by Stuart Mathewson. He's talking about the pesky fruit fly and their remarkable fecundity. Fecundity. There's a nice word for you. Fecundity. What does that mean? Well, it's the ability to produce an abundance of offspring or new growth. Yeah. So he's telling us in the paper today, returned home after a few nights away, he opened the recycling bin to find the remains of a banana and a cloud of shimmering, coppery flies. Fruit flies! Tiny little pesky little things. Scientific name. I will say this only once, and I'll do it with confidence and fast. Drosophila melanogaster. Thank you very much. Thank you. They produce extremely quickly, and depending on the ambient temperature, and it was quite hot last week, they can develop from egg to mature adult in around a week, right? At which point, females can lay 100 eggs a day. And of course, they go from egg to maturity within a week, and then there's 100 of them, and then there's, yeah, do the maths on that. It's more than exponential. But here, there is a good thing. There is good news when it comes to the fruit fly. Anybody who did Leave It to Science will know that the fruit fly is hugely important when it comes to genetics. Because they can go through 6 or 7 generations in a month, you can study them, and you can study how things get passed from one fruit fly to the other or don't, and how you can change their genetic makeup and epigenetics and all that sort of thing. So there might be a pain, and they might be pesky, when it comes to, you know, when you come back after a few days after leaving an overripe banana in the kitchen. But when it comes to science, we say thank you very much to the fruit fly. No, I won't say it again. You saw that today as well. I'm fascinated by sleep, and, you know, they were saying, although it hasn't happened really, maybe it has, that it's becoming more and more important in health, in that people, scientists, doctors, medical professionals are realising more and more the importance of sleep. And seemingly, we're very good sleepers in this country. Yes, we are. Science Direct involved approximately 220,000 people in 35 countries, 500 Irish participants, of whom 70% were male. And it found that we're good sleepers. Yes, we're up there. We sleep more during the week than people in any other country examined. So they found, on average, we went to sleep on weekdays at 20 to 12 and woke up at about 7:30. And that's a total of around 7 hours, 7 to 1/4 hours. So the journal are asking people, how long do you sleep today in their poll? I like their polls. You know, they're immediate. They're sort of a little window into people's attitudes. So how long do you sleep? 6 to 8 hours, the majority, which is 61.7%. 4 to 6 hours, 988. Didn't Margaret Thatcher famously only sleep for 4 hours? More than 8 hours a night, 425 hours, and less than 4 hours a night, 134 hours. And my heart goes out to those people because that's a tough one. They're saying more than eight and less than six, you have problems. So you can oversleep. You can actually, it's been scientifically proven now that that's not good for your health either. So oversleeping isn't as good for your health. I'm 45, Ray, and have proudly never seen any of those TV shows apart from The Simpsons. I don't own a suit or tie and have only worn one once. Sorry, I don't own a suit or tie and have only worn one once. Oh, yeah. So you did probably for a Debs or something back in the day. Yeah. Now, if I never wore a shirt and tie again. I wear a shirt, but it's open neck. And if I never wore a dicky bow again, I'd be very happy. I'd be very happy. I'd break out in a rash. Not literally, but just they make me feel icky. Do dicky bows. Anyway, 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Final, before we go to the opening piece of music, we spoke to Eamon Keaveney on Monday. He's a unicyclist and he's going from Mizzen to Mallon. That's from Cork to Donegal on a unicycle. The wheel is a big green wheel, diameter of 36 inches, so it's a big one. He covers more ground than your average unicycle with a big wheel like that. He set off on Sunday from Mizzen. We spoke to him when he was in Charleville and he was heading towards County Clare. He's raising money for the Simon community and he's trying to break a Guinness Book of World Records. And we were on to him earlier. I said, Eamon, come in, Eamon, on your unicycle. Where are you?
Hi, Ray. How's it going? Just landed in Ballybuffet in County Donegal. By a funny coincidence, the circus happens to be in town. Yesterday was quite tough, now I have to say. It was a bit of a washout coming up through Sligo. Today, at least, the sun is a bit kinder, but I'm really struggling today with the pain in my legs. But we'll power on. We've 530 kilometres done, so the finish line is very much in sight. I just want to thank people for all the support that they've given me along the way. I've gotten lots of beeps and waves and really nice messages. And of course, thank you very much to everyone who's donated to the Simon Communities of Ireland. It's really, really appreciated. So yeah, we're gonna do this. Let's go.
Bicycle. Let's go. Bicycle. There you go. That's enough of that. Well done, Eamon. So beep, wave, give him encouragement and support the Simon community. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon. The Indigo Girls, Closer to Fine. I'm playing that today because I saw Barbie the movie last night and that song is featured heavily. And before I talk about Barbie, we got a phone call from upstairs to say, did you know that Fionnuala Brennan, him of RT Radio 1 and the Hot As Flowers, played whistle on that song? Which was recorded back in the late 1980s. Didn't know that, so there you go, that's that. As I say, featured in the Barbie movie, which we watched last night. I know I'm a Johnny come lately to it, because half the world saw it when it was out in the cinema. I'm still digesting it. I definitely enjoyed the experience. It was great, very funny. The message, very, very strong message, but wrapped up in pink and sparkly and songs and all that sort of thing. And I'm sort of digesting that, and I may come back to you when it's a very, very strong message in it. And I sort of knew that because, you know, people have been talking about it and I read reviews, but definitely enjoyed it. And Margot Robbie is amazing in it. Ryan Reynolds doesn't have to do as much because his character, Ken, is less nuanced than Barbie is in it, but he does a brilliant job of what he has to do, and he sings and he dances, so he's what they used to call back in the old days a triple threat, and Margot Robbie is a triple threat as well, because she sings. Does she sing in it? Yeah, she does, and she dances, so she's a triple threat too. And wasn't the late Gene Kelly, he was a quadruple threat, because he not only did he sing, dance, act, he also wrote. And he choreographed, so he was a quintuplet threat, if that's the way you'd say it. Now, great song here in School West Cork, Lashing It Down. And there's a bit of a sort of debate happening about signing off and letters and emails, probably more so emails now, because less and less people write letters. Gary is in Essex in the UK. He said, it is hard to end a letter. He's going, am I yours? In inverted commas, or am I really sincere? Am I faithful? The convention is fine, I get that, but email is not the formal, or is it? I'm confused, says Gary. We're confused as well. Well, Peter in Cork isn't confused at all. He says, "Dear Ray, yours sincerely, kind regards, and dear Ray, still reflect professionalism, good manners, education, and a higher register of language. Hi and hello and no formal salutation are just reflective of the language decline of the current professional generation rated on not-so-social media. Yours sincerely, kind regards." You see, Peter and Cork. I don't know. I wouldn't think any less of somebody if they didn't sign off with a yours sincerely or a kind regards or a best wishes or a yours faithfully. Not at all. I wouldn't think they're any less professional than the next person. But obviously, you do. The trend in business sign-offs for letters is kindest regards or regards. It's rude not to say something. See, I would always say it in the email. I would say, I hope you're having a good day or I hope all's good with you. So, you've covered it there. And then just end it with your name. Anyway. 51551 Ray at RT.ie. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers, three questions each, and there will be clues as well. And of course, there is a prize. A great prize this week. And it's a two-night stay for two people at the Fota Island Resort. And there is loads of things to do. Or even there are loads of things to do at the Fota Island Resort. Walking trails, indoor swimming pool, the world-class Fota Island Spa, the exclusive Cove restaurant, and there's golf there as well. And then close by, there's Fota Wildlife Park, Fota House and Gardens. You can go into Cork City, you can go to Ballymaloe, you can go to Middleton, you can go to Ballycotton. FotaIsland.ie, FotaIsland.ie. Here's your qualifying question on this Thursday afternoon. The new iPhone was launched this week. Who makes it? Orange or Apple? The new iPhone was launched this week. Who makes it? Orange or Apple? 0818715925. That's 0818715925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'm joined in studio by Alex McElhaney. How are you doing, Alex?
Good, very good.
Good to have you here. And Vanessa Matchak. How are you doing, Vanessa?
Good, thank you.
Yeah. Now, this month, September, is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and both Alex and Vanessa have been diagnosed with cancer. What age were you when you got your diagnosis?
14 years old.
And what age are you now?
Almost 16.
Okay. So it's quite recent.
Yeah. Very recent. Yeah, last year in August.
Right.
I found out.
Yeah. How did you find out?
Well, I was an active person, and I just lost motivation. I was very tired, and I started to get bruises on my legs, and I didn't feel like myself. So I ended up going to get a blood test done, and I got diagnosed with leukemia the day after the blood test. So.
Okay. You're saying you're an active person. What sort of stuff did you do?
Running, cycling, hiking, mountain climbing, all sorts.
Right.
Anything that involved sport.
Very active.
Yeah.
And you had the bruising as well, Alex, did you?
Yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 11 for the first time. And
what age are you now?
17.
Right.
So, yeah, bruises, petechiae, yeah, they're just kind of like little red dots all over your legs, arms. But yeah, major sign was like very easily bruised.
Mm. And you were active as well?
Yeah, I played football for my local football team.
Right.
So, like, it wasn't unusual to have a few bruises. But you can just tell by adults around you, like, asking questions, they were getting worried, then it would worry me. And it was just a matter of time before we had to get a blood test.
Yeah. And what position did you play?
I was centre-back for a few years, and then centre-mid, and then just all over the shop.
So you were in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say a lot of bruises on the ankles. Yeah,
yeah.
And because you were 11, of course, it was very much, you know, the people around you, the adults, who were saying and probably whispering at the time to keep the bad news away from you.
Yeah. My mom and dad were behind my back. They were worried. But when I first started to actually get worried was when my coach mentioned it. And I think he thought stuff might have been going on at home.
Oh, right.
But so that upset me, but I didn't show it. And then like 2 days later, we had a blood test booked. And then they said they'd ring back in 7 to 10 days. And we got a call back an hour later to get back into hospital.
That's never good, is it?
No, never good.
No. So you go back in and your mum there, Louisa, and your dad, Peter, are with you. You're sitting down. You're only 11.
Mm.
Does the doctor say to you as an 11-year-old you have cancer?
Well, it started off waiting around for like 4 hours, and then we're called into a tiny little room. and they ask me to leave so they can talk to my mum and dad. And then I come back like 10 minutes later and they're telling me exactly what it is, but they don't say cancer anywhere, so I'm still confused. And then the very last sentence is just confirming. They say, yeah, you have cancer. And then that's when my life changed.
And as an 11-year-old, was cancer anywhere in your life before that?
No. I knew, I was aware of what it was, but I was, in my head, cancer was what made you lose your hair, not chemo. So it was a whole...
Oh, right.
It was just a whole mix-up in my head.
It's mad, because the first thing he thought of was his hair. You were famous for your hair, were you?
Yeah.
Why so? Yeah. Why were you famous for your hair?
Well, I was just like sandy blonde kid.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
My hair was my
your
best
identity.
Feature.
Yes. Yeah. I wouldn't say your best feature, but
yeah.
So you were immediately recognizable from your hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And you thought then cancer? I'm going to lose my hair.
Yeah, yeah, that's the first thing I thought. Yeah.
Chemo. Is that something you thought of?
Yeah, the first thing, like, my granny had cancer before I found out, so I kind of knew, but I didn't know the backstory. I was like, oh, chemo and children losing hair, and that's about it. I didn't know the backstory, so when I found out that, like, my hair, it will fall out, I was like, oh, no. Like, I did not, the first thing was hair as well. I was like, I don't want it to fall out.
And you were a bit older than Alex when you found out, so were you told up front?
Well, they took my mom out of the room and... It was that they were gone for like half an hour and I realized that something is not good. They're not coming back for so long. I had that feeling in my stomach that something is not right. And they came back into the room and my mom was trying to cover up that she was crying. That's when I started to get very anxious. I was like, what's going on? Tell me, tell me, tell me. At the start, I wanted to know everything. So the doctor sat down beside me and she held my hand and she was like, you have a leukemia. And I knew that it was a type of cancer, but I didn't know which type. And from that, I started going crazy. I had like a panic attack. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't believe them at first. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure it's that and that? It was a massive change in my life from that day on. My life was completely different.
Mm. It's understandable that you'd go crazy. One of the first things that happened to you both is the Hickman line.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's the Hickman line?
It's like a central line above your chest. So instead of having cannulas in your veins and them stabbing your veins all the time, they insert a central line above your chest and that's where they take bloods from. They put chemo through that and medicine so it won't hurt you, like if you're in a lot of pain already from the chemo.
So it's sort of a one-stop shop for...
Yeah.
Right. And you don't have it now, do you?
I do.
Oh, you do? You still have it, right?
Yeah. I don't anymore, but right. Yeah, that was... I think that top three, like, worst things is the central line. But it's different for different people, really. Like, for me, I was so aware of it. And you'd hear horror stories of, like, babies pulling their Hickman line out. And, like, it goes straight up to your heart. So it's actually not as worrying as you'd think. But altogether, it's just...
The trigger of it.
Yeah, there's...
Like, yeah, well, I suppose it's a constant... Not that you need a constant reminder that you have cancer, but it is a constant...
It is, yeah.
Yes.
And it's a foreign object in your body.
In your body, yeah, yeah.
It's not really, like... It doesn't make sense for it to be there.
No, no. And, of course, it's open to infection as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you get infected? Your Hickman line got infected, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, when you're talking about it initially and you know, We now can, at the push of a button or the whatever of a mouse, we can find out about anything, you know. So did you research it or were you encouraged not to? Or did your
parents
research?
I was encouraged not to look it up on the internet at all, just what the doctors told me. And I didn't look anything up because I was too scared, because then I would be overthinking everything that I saw on the internet. So I just stayed and listened to the doctors. That's about it.
And when you sort of settled down, so to speak... And you knew that this was a reality for you and your world had changed. Did you have a chat with yourself about how you were going to approach it?
Yeah, I told myself that I have to process it first. I processed it and that I have to stay strong for myself and for my family and that I know how strong I am and I can do this. So it was a lot of courage and determination to actually get through all of this.
Yeah. How did you tell your mates?
I was in fourth class, the end of fourth class, and the day I was diagnosed, all I was asking was, am I going to be able to go back for my end of year party?
All right.
And they were saying, no, no. But my principal told my class and my year what had happened. So I didn't even get a chance. Like, I was too young. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have anything to, like, get in contact. So, yeah.
So the chemo happened quite quickly, did it?
Yeah, within day two, I had the Hickman line in. Chemo going in day two as well. And then that went on for 9 months until maintenance. So, yeah, the first 9 months were just heavy chemo and steroids.
And hair loss.
Hair loss. Like, everything gone weak. Like, wheelchair every day. Like, everything. It's unimaginable. Like, when you see... You can't actually describe. You have to see someone that sick to really realise, like, they're going through it.
Yeah. And you were out the other side. You were in Crumlin.
Yeah.
And I've heard on numerous occasions over the years this ceremonial ringing of the bell.
Mm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so after my treatment, after the 9 months, I started maintenance, which lasted 2.5 years. And that was just like 5 days of steroids every month. But it affected like 2 weeks of the month.
Mm.
But yeah, I finished and I rang the bell. And there's a big celebration. And
is that cancer-free? Is that
Yeah, that's the term, cancer-free.
Right.
And the doctors had my last session with the doctors, and they said, like, if you see things, don't worry, like bruises or anything. Like, it's nothing to worry about. You don't need to come back. Because that's what you do. If you see a bruise, you get worried and you ring the hospital. And they were saying, no, none of that. So we, 12 weeks later, we started seeing bruises again. And we were like, no, we don't need to ring back. And then it just got too overwhelming. So we rang back. I went in like 24 hours, 48 hours. We had the news that I relapsed.
And you relapsed as well,
yeah.
Vanessa. So did you get to ring the bell?
No.
No, never got to ring the bell.
No.
Of course, you're only sort of recent compared to Alex. So where are you at then with your treatment?
Well, I had my first transplant and then...
This is stem cells.
Stem cell transplant, yes. And then 4 months post-transplant, I also got a call that I've had a relapse. And they said that I'm going to be put on 3 courses of chemo injections, so I had that done, but then I had another biopsy done and it said that it's just delaying the cancer cells, they're not being destroyed, they're still growing. So I'm going in for a second transplant in a few weeks' time for an umbilical cord transplant. So I have to have radiotherapy before that, and it's 4 times more dangerous than the stem cell transplant. So I got told that just 2 days ago, how dangerous it is and what the risks of it are. So I'm still like processing that. So
do you get angry at the world?
For a few days, yeah. But then I'm like, it is what it is. I have to keep going. So I've set my mindset to be strong enough to handle anything at this point.
I think I agree. Like the first, you have like a week to be angry, I think, but you kind of have to decide, like, are you going to dig a deeper pit and make everything worse for everyone around you, or just aim up and get on with life?
That's what you do, aim up.
Mm.
Aim up. Now, the Daisy Lodge, I've come across this before. It's an amazing place. There's one up in Northern Ireland, and they're fundraising now to build one in Cong in County Mayo, and Rory Best, the former Ireland captain, did a big charity walk for that. You've both been there.
Yeah.
What was your experience, Alex?
Daisy Lodge, it's unbelievable. I went the first time I was 11. I've been there 4 times. The first time I was 11. You don't get to go anywhere during cancer. Like, you're too vulnerable to go on holidays, get out. You don't have enough money. So it's all confusing. But when you get to Daisy Lodge, the first thing I said to my mom when I was in Daisy Lodge was, I don't feel like I have cancer when I'm here. And I was 11, so that's a very big statement to say. So I can't really explain Daisy Lodge. Like, the vibe around it is just unbelievable. It's so relaxing. The whole family get a benefit out of it. Like, they don't have to walk around eggshells around you anymore. It just I think everyone's experience is the same. It's absolutely an amazing place.
You're a normal teenager again while you're up there. Is that it?
Yeah. Feels like you're just going on holiday somewhere nice and just like you get to relax and do all these fun activities.
Just fundraising at cancerfundforchildren.com. And as I say, they're fundraising to build one in the Republic over in County Mayo. And it's a brilliant thing. And it provides respite, not just for people who have children and teenagers who have cancer, but also for their family, which is an important thing. How are you feeling now? You got that bad news 2 days ago.
I got more bad news today just before I went on the show. I feel like I was kind of expecting it, but I didn't feel that it would damage me that bad. But like, as I said, I'm not going to give up.
What bad news did you get today?
I need to get radiotherapy. And there's bigger risks with
it. Oh, yes, you said that, yes.
Yeah, there's just some private things about it that will happen towards the future. And I wasn't expecting for it to actually happen. So, like, it's a bit of a shock.
I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Virtual hug. And what about you? How are you?
Yeah, like, I'm basically out the other end now. Like, I'm still tired some of the days, but, like, I'll take what I can get. Like, I'm lucky not to be back where I was a few years ago, so I'm just grateful for where I am now.
So you're out the other side, are you?
Basically.
Oh, yeah, right, okay. So you can give support to Vanessa. Esther says, please pass on good wishes to your guests. They're unbelievable. Stay strong, Esther. And the thing that you just mentioned there in passing, which is hugely important, and people should remember, is that there's a big draw on the family, isn't there, financially?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. Because you live in Mayo, you have to come up to Dublin for treatment, all of those things there. I know you're in Dublin, so you're closer to treatment. Well, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your stories, and we wish you well. And we wish Liverpool well. I know you're a Liverpool supporter. And I hope to see you again, Vanessa. Okay, mind yourself.
Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a real treat in store for you. Fans of Schitt's Creek will be more than familiar with the version of Simply the Best that Noah Reid's character Patrick sang in the hit TV show. It was in the Rose Apothecary. You have to say it fast, don't you?
You do. Yeah.
Even when you introduced yourself singing that song in the episode, whatever, 4, was it the final season?
Apothecary. Emily Hampshire would always say apothecary. Right. And you'd be like, that's not right.
That's not right. Say it fast and with confidence.
There you go. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Noah Reid, people probably didn't know. A lot of people didn't know that you were a singer. Mm. They just presumed you were an actor. And of course, that version of Tina Turner's song brought your music to a wider audience.
Yeah.
So I want to find out about you, about your singing, about the acting, about Schitt's Creek, all of that. So we've a good bit of time. You're going to sing for us as well.
Awesome.
Great to have you in. Well,
thanks
so much.
Thanks for having me.
So which came first? Which came first, the acting or the singing?
I guess, probably the acting. I don't know. Maybe my parents would say both around the same time. My first sort of foray into the world of entertainment was really in musicals. And my first gig was a community theater production of Oliver, in which I played Oliver. And so that's one of the only musicals I think I've ever done, really. But for the most part, I like to keep those elements of my
life. So talking about it earlier on, a triple threat.
Well, I can't dance.
Okay,
really.
Not dance.
So,
no, okay,
you know,
you're a double threat.
two is where I leave it. And I try to be non-threatening in general.
Yes,
I think. I do love both things, and I love to kind of, get to jump between. Switching gears professionally is a lot of fun. I think,
Yeah, now I've been talking about Schitt's Creek for a long time, and some of the listeners have come along with me, others haven't. So for those who haven't, you should just explain.
Well,
the whole
it's not
phenomenon.
Too late. You
yeah,
know?
It's not too
it's
late.
Never
it's
never too late for Schitt's Creek. A beautiful show, and certainly an amazing time of my life to get to work with some incredible people: Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, Dan Levy, Annie Murphy. I mean, these are Emmy winners we're talking about here, and I got to hang out with them for several years and get to be a part of this brilliant show.
And of course, it was very much Canadian.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Which, you know, for I don't know how many Canadians you have on your show, but I'm sure they all make a point of letting you know just how Canadian they are. and that's a sort of a national identity thing for us. But, you know, comedy's a big deal in Canada.
Oh, is it? Right, right.
We have a good export going of comedy around the world, you know. Yeah. And so it's nice to feel like I've contributed to that in some way.
So for people who don't know, sort of co-created by Dan and Eugene, son and father, mm-hmm. in that order. People mm-hmm. will know Eugene from loads of movies.
Sure.
It's a very rich family who fall on hard times, and they some way they own this place called Schitt's Creek, or maybe they do.
Yeah.
And they end up from mansion to motel. And that's really it, isn't it? That's
the, you nailed it. Yeah. You did it, so I didn't have to, and I love you for that. Okay.
Because you've done it too often.
Well, yeah, that in the Screen Actors Guild strike. It's
Sure. Yes, what you can say.
Where the line is of what is promoting a show. Yeah. So I'm delicate in reflecting on the show.
Yeah, I will do it for you.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So your character is Patrick. Dan, the co-creator's character, is David. You arrive in Schitt's Creek, and you're going out with a girl, and you go into business with David, and love blossoms.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I loved the way that storyline was really handled with love and care and attention and also a real kind of positivity and a normalcy that I feel like, you know, same-sex couples on television don't often get.
And I suppose huge fan base all over the world, but the gay community just took it to heart.
It just felt like it was this wave. I mean, I don't know if it was this if it was the timing of it, or I think a lot of people found it during the pandemic, and that was, you know, it kept people company a lot during that time. But it also, you know, it just filled this area, maybe this gap in the industry that just kind of it took the relationship seriously. It treated the elements of it that might be, you know, quote unquote issues with a grain of salt and with a sense of humor and with a deep sense of humanity. And I think that really resonated with people.
Yeah. So you and David, your character Patrick and David, set up this sort of what how would you describe it? They sell candles and
a general store that is also a very specific store.
Yeah, loads of things that you don't need, but you definitely want.
That's right.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you decide. Your character decides you're going to have an open mic night, and he's a bit cringy about it. So you go up, you introduce yourself, and you sing this song.
Yeah.
To him, dedicated to him.
Yeah. Played it on the guitar before, but I'll play it on the piano now.
Nice. Noah Reid. Noah Reid is in Dublin's Academy tomorrow night on his Everything's Fine tour. And we're going to hear an original song from you shortly. Ray, I always ask North Americans, are they Canadians? Because Americans don't mind the mistake. And the Canadians are thrilled that you knew they were not Americans.
That's a great trick for anyone trying to figure out American versus Canadian. I love that.
Because, you know, we don't like being called English.
Well, yeah, that's a harder mistake to make, I feel like.
Is it?
I don't know.
About New Zealand and Australia? It's the same sort of relationship.
I suppose you're right. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I think the Irish sound is so specific and so...
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably
musical. Right. It's a beautiful thing. You know?
You've been here a good bit. You've been in the company of Glenn Hansard. Good company.
Yeah, well, very good company.
Yeah.
Brief company. I don't know that Glenn would remember I have spent any time with him at all, but it was a nice way to experience a little bit of Dublin, certainly.
Was it a session in a pub? Was it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was playing in some local place, and a friend of mine is a close friend of his, and I got treated to a real beautiful chicken dinner and a close up show. Really, it was a spectacular
treat.
Yeah, it was really something. He's got a pure sense of musicality and showmanship.
He's a talent.
Really is.
Yeah. You got married during... There was a lot going on during the pandemic. You got married and Schitt's Creek was hitting a peak.
Yeah.
And just do the logistics of the walking up the aisle, your wife Claire, and you were you on a guitar or was it a cappella?
I was on a guitar and I was trying to sing the Book of Love.
Beautiful song.
Which I love that song, and I could not hold the tune to save my life. It was probably the worst singing I've ever done. I was so emotional seeing her come. We got married on a beach and she was coming down the stairs I was losing it.
Yeah.
it's not an attractive look, I don't think, when your husband to be is just blubbering into a microphone and struggling to play the guitar. But yeah, it was a good time.
You tried.
I tried. It's the thought that counts, right?
Yeah. So you're in Italy recently, Dan Levy's birthday.
Dan had the audacity to turn 40, so you know,
right,
seemed only right to keep him company for that.
I'm aware that people haven't seen Schitt's Creek, but I'm going to direct them towards it again. And six seasons, a lot of people, mainly fans, thought that it ended too soon.
Mm.
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, thankfully it wasn't my decision to make. I think it would have been very hard to figure out. But you know, I think there was a sense for all of us that it was the story wanted to conclude there, and it just made sense for it to be the time to you'd rather go out on top than peter out. So.
Have we got time for this song now, or do we go to an? We have. Okay, you're going to sing one of your own now. Left Behind.
Right.
When you're ready, some lovely text there. I'll read them to you after you sing. NoahReid.com. Noah Reid, Sublime, says somebody. Thank you for playing my favourite version. That was the best. Got totally obsessed with Schitt's Creek. A beautiful voice and such a beautiful series, full of heart. The characters bring you on a journey with them as they change and transform. It is very life affirming. Thoroughly recommended. With thanks, Deirdre. And absolutely love Schitt's Creek. That scene was one of the most romantic and beautiful scenes ever. Magic show. Regards, Aileen.
Thank you very much, guys.
We'll get it out there, and you don't need to say anything. They say it for you.
That's perfect.
Okay. So Dublin's Academy tomorrow night. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having
thank
me
you,
very much.
Thank you, Nori. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandmaga Kieran, apologies again for being late. We've loads of things to do. Yes, this yep, dup, 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 dup. Two quiz are standing by, and there's a prize, and it's a two-night stay for two people in Fota Island Resort, and you know all about that by now. Loads of things to do: walking trails, swimming pools. There's the spa down there, the Cove restaurant, and then you're within walking distance of Fota Wildlife Park, Fota House and Gardens, and then you can hop on a whatever and go into Cork or go to Ballymaloe or go to Middleton, go to Ballycotton. FotaIsland.ie. FotaIsland.ie. Patricia Kavanagh's in Bray in County Wicklow. Hello, Patricia.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're heading off.
I'm going to England next week to visit my daughter and her husband and grandchildren.
Aha. And they're over there. Go on.
I have a daughter who lives in Cork as well.
Right. So you could visit, if you win, you could visit them. And where in England are your family?
I'm going to Southampton.
Yeah.
And I have three grandchildren.
Right.
What Caitlin age? Caitlin is two.
Yeah.
Or Evie is 4.5 and Ava's 6.
Right. Okay.
So they're busy.
Now, will you be babysitting when you go over there, Patricia, do you think?
I might.
Yes. but it's a pleasure to do that.
Oh, I love doing it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're gorgeous.
And how long, is it your daughter or your son's over there?
Oh, it's my daughter. Yeah, she's there about 10 years, I think.
Okay, rightio.
Married to a man from Southampton. Right. Lovely man.
Great. How are you on the sleeping? We're great sleepers.
Terrible.
Seemingly. Are you?
Well, I sleep, babe, 6 hours, but I go through patches.
Yeah.
I'd be quite surprised if I had a really good night's sleep.
Well, 6 isn't bad, you know. 6 isn't bad at all.
Yeah.
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 But you get through the day. You don't notice that you've missed any sleep, do you? No. No. Well, then you're fine.
No.
You're fine. Then. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're up against Cathy Tarmey, who's in Galway. Hello, Cathy.
Hello, Ray.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Is it Galway City or County?
Galway City.
Right. And what are you up to today?
Well, I'm just chilling now after my yoga class.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just back and had a bit of lunch and just heard your
call out. Yeah, yeah. And you said
and I I tried it again and again, and yeah, I got through.
Great. And you're here.
Yeah.
Yoga. When I used to do it, and I should get back into it because it's brilliant, I used to feel taller after it.
You must have been doing it right then.
I mustn't have been doing it right. Okay, right.
You must have been doing it right.
I must have been doing it right. Yes. Yeah, I was because I'd walk out of the place and I'd feel, oh God, I'd say I'm about 5'11" now, not 5'8¾". No, it was imagined, obviously not real. What do you do? You do yoga. What's on tonight now? Are you cooking or what's going on?
Nothing much on tonight now. I have the dinner cooked since yesterday evening, so that'll be tonight's dinner looked after.
And what is that?
It's kind of a beef stir-fry sort of a thing.
Right.
It's basically everything with the kitchen sink thrown in together.
And those things improve with age, particularly beef.
They do. Second day is always better.
Yes, it is. It is, because the lovely flavours infuse into the meat. It's delicious. So you're looking forward to that. Okay. Right. So it's Patricia v. Cathy. Three questions each. I tell you the category and then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. And if you go without a clue, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. Say again?
You got that wrong, if you go for a clue.
If you go for a clue, you get a point. If you get it right. And then if you go without a clue, you get 2 points. Isn't that the rules? I think it is. I've been doing it for a while. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Right, let's go. Let's do it. Good luck to you both. Patricia.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi.
The first category is music. Do you want a clue or not?
I think I'll take a clue.
Yes, you'll take a clue. Now, if you get this right, you get a point. Just, isn't that right, Cathy?
Okay.
That's right. Okay.
That's right.
Radio. Okay, that's right. Okay. Right, here's your clue, Patricia. He shares his first name with the king. Can you name this singer for 1 point? I was always here to stay. I was always on their way. And I would rather be anywhere else but today. Who's that?
Is it Elvis Costello?
It is Elvis Costello. Oliver's Army. 1 point. Well done. Good start. Cathy. Music for you. Do you want a clue?
No clue.
No clue. Okay. For two. Who's singing this? As I go make you see, nobody else here, no one like me. I'm special, so special. I gotta have some of your attention. Give it to me. Who's that?
Chrissie Hynde.
I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that. It's the Pretenders. She's the lead singer. She's singing that. She is singing it, so you are correct. So 2 points there. Yeah, Pretenders and Brass and Pocket. Right. Well done. Good start, Cathy. Two versus one. Patricia, second category. Irish weather forecasters. Irish weather forecasters.
I'll have to go. No clue.
No clue. Okay. For two. Can you name this Irish weather forecaster?
The warning out until about lunchtime tomorrow for the whole country for ice and hazard conditions out on the surfaces across the country. There is a bit of a weather front there coming along western coasts, keeping it cloudier there, so the temperature's higher there. Some of the rain initially falling is sleet and snow, and there's a risk of some freezing rain. That brings black ice, so very, very tricky conditions possible.
Like a picture. It's not
Evan Kuzak
now.
No, it's not. No. You're right, it's not. Joanna Donnelly. I hope nobody just tuned in and thought that was tonight's weather forecast. No, that's just a question in a quiz. That could be very confusing for people. Okay, stay with us, Patricia. You're on one. Cathy, Irish weather forecasters for you. Do you want a clue?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. I don't know if this will help in any way, but this meteorologist comes from Monaghan. So this person comes from Monaghan. Can you name him for 1 point?
Starting from tomorrow, as rain crosses the country, with further spells of rain then, mainly in the east and south, as we go through Thursday and Friday. Now, if we take a look at the satellite sequence through today, good sunshine over much of the country, with, as you can see, thickening cloud out here to the west associated with this weather system, which is continuing to approach. So while tomorrow, Wednesday, will start off largely dry, we will see wet, blustery weather developing in the west towards noon.
Who's that?
Not a clue.
No clue.
No.
Jerry Murphy. Okay. Right, so let's see where we are. Kathy, you're on two. Patricia, you're on one.
Yeah.
Now, Patricia, if you go with the clue and get it right, you'll get a point. The category is former Republic of Ireland footballers. Okay, former Republic of Ireland footballers. So if you go with a clue and get it right, you're on two. That means that if Kathy gets anything from her final question, she's the winner.
Okay. I'll go no clue.
You're going no clue. Okay. I was going to do other permutations for you, but I won't bother. Okay, good luck with this. Good luck with this. Stay in the quiz. Former Republic of Ireland footballer, can you name him for 2 points?
Because I can guarantee you there was definitely no paparazzi at the Galtymore. I didn't lose the run of myself. I just went, I'd always kind of wait as the week went on. I'd know by Thursday, Friday where I was. And I was playing in the reserves. We were winning the league, the reserve. We were too good, to be playing at league. Might have one or two tough games a year.
Who's that?
It's Niall Quinn.
It is Niall Quinn! Whoa! That makes it interesting. A late goal for Patricia. You're on three, Patricia. Kathy.
Thank you.
You're on two.
Yes.
Now, here's your choices. You can take a clue to go safe, and then you would be even with Patricia if you get it right and we go to a tie-break situation. However, if you want to finish it all off, you go without a clue, get it right, and you're today's winner. However, it's a risk because if you get it wrong, Patricia is today's winner. What do you want to do?
I'll have to take a clue away.
Oh, you're going to take a clue. Right, okay. So it's former Republic of Ireland footballers. He retired from playing internationally in 1990 with 72 caps. Who is this for 1 point?
Well, if I was Graham Potter, the last person I'd want at the club is Cristiano Ronaldo. I think he has a good array of forwards there already. As we've seen at Manchester United, Ronaldo's not playing. He can be a problem. But it may be that the owner, he's an American owner, Cristiano Ronaldo, has this kind of aura about him.
Who's that?
I can see him.
Yeah.
That's not.
I need it. No, nothing there. No.
No.
Liam Brady.
Oh, Liam.
You started off well, Kathy. And Patricia sort of came from behind, I suppose. We're going to send out Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. And lovely talking to you, Kathy.
All right, Ray.
Enjoy the stew. See you. Bye, bye. That's Kathy there. Patricia, well done.
Thanks very much. That's brilliant.
Yeah, you have a daughter who lives in Cork as well, so Fota Island is perfect. And you can go to see what's in store for you, fotaisland.ie. Great talking to you, Patricia.
Thanks,
well done. Bye now.
Bye,
bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're delighted to be joined by broadcaster and author Dermot O'Leary. Dermot's sixth children's book, Wings of Glory, is out today. How are you doing, Dermot?
Hey, Ray. How are you? Good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. So you've swapped cats for birds.
Well, I mean, cats will always be there. They're omnipresent.
Yes.
But yeah, so I don't know if your listeners are familiar, but I've done 5 books about my cat, who's called Toto, who over the period of the 5 books, I've turned into this kind of international member of an ancient order of international ninja cats. And she basically works for Larry the 10 Downing Street cat to make sure that world leaders largely don't do anything stupid, which they seem to do a lot, and look after animal kind. And then my publisher, Hachette, said for the sixth book, they said, listen, any new ideas, what do you fancy? And I was like, well, listen, I really love history, and World War II is probably my sweet spot of history. And I really love writing for animals, you know, that sort of personification of animals. So how do I why don't I combine the two? And so I went away and had to think about it. And I was like, well, you know, the area of World War II I probably know most about is the Battle of Britain. So therefore, let's use my central character as a bird. And I'm actually also I'm a keen sort of bird watcher. So the swifts and the peregrine falcons are like the fastest birds in the sky. So that was my starting point. And I thought, well, right, okay. So the peregrines are like the blue bloods. They look spectacular, and you know, they're the killers. Where the swifts are kind of the plucky underdogs. So I have a swift who is born in Kent, migrates to the Congo, And then the call comes out, and he answers the call to come back. And so the unbeknownst to us, animals are fighting on our behalf in the Second World War. So we have the RBF, which is the Royal Bird Force, and this little Swift and his sister volunteer to fight in the front line, largely to bring down German planes with their own poo. Right. And but the Peregrine Falcons, they won't have him in the squadron because
he's a Swift, they're quite elitist.
So he ends up in this raggle-taggle squadron of a magpie who thieves everything, an owl who won't get out of bed before 8 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
And but somehow he befriends a Peregrine Falcon, and they change the course of history.
Marcus.
There we go. Done.
Marcus, and Linus is the main character. He's the Swift.
He is. Yeah.
Ava absolutely. Is his sister, and then Marcus. He befriends Marcus, doesn't he?
Yeah. He kind of ends up saving Marcus's life, and then so they then have a bit of a bond.
Yeah.
And then they find themselves over France. I don't want to give too much away, but that's where the action properly starts.
But so there's only a select few in the world who know that we can communicate, or they can communicate with animals. Is that it?
Absolutely. This is it. Right. So it's only like kings, queens, presidents, certain prime ministers,
right,
under pain of poo, basically. So if they break that promise, then a squadron of pigeons, night and day, 24/7, like will hound them and largely pull on their heads. And right, the pigeons play a vital role because as we all know, you know, carrier pigeons,
yes,
you know, were used extensively.
Lord Speckles is the carrier pigeon,
so carrier pigeons are the way that the animal kingdom communicates with the humankind. But yes, Lord Speckles is my main character, who's this kind of First World War hero who's kind of now largely kind of lost his mind, a combination of age and shell shock, but he is still this kind of like First World War hero. So his kind of central to the plot is Lord Speckles. In fact, I was just telling my colleagues, I'm going to bring Lord Speckles back in one of the subsequent books, because already he's the character people are talking to me about the most.
Yeah, does that happen? Because I suppose it's like, you know, if you're a pop star, you write songs, and one may be your favourite, but the fans may like something else.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually with the Toto books that, like, I mean, everyone loves Toto, but then there's kind of periphery characters like Archduke Ferdicat, who's kind of Toto's sworn enemy, is by far and away one of the most popular characters, as is Catface, who's this kind of gigantic rat who looks like a cat, who's like their guide to London. And and those are the characters, like, quite often when you're speaking to kids at book festivals or so forth, that they're the ones that chime. But then there's what's really interesting, World Book Day, you'll always see kids dressed up as Toto, which is great. I mean, it's a pretty easy costume, which is like largely cat ears, eyes, and a ninja pose. So it's not too taxing for parents.
But
you're right, and that's the nice thing. You know, so Wings of Glory is published today, and the lovely thing is I'm getting, you know, feedback from parents already that you know, this kid loves this character, and Lord Speckles is definitely the... I mean, your producer was just asking me about Lord Speckles,
so I must have made
some impact.
is it the anniversary of the Battle of Britain tomorrow, today, or around now, is it?
Well, it's interesting. So, I mean, it's kind of coincidental, if I'm honest with you, because it's my anniversary today, and the anniversary of Battle of Britain Day is tomorrow, the 15th of September.
What do you mean your anniversary?
My actual anniversary today, yeah. Me and my wife.
Oh, so congratulations.
Yeah, 11 years today.
Oh, all right. That, brilliant. We were 10 years in August.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it is lovely. And you have a three-year-old.
Yes.
Casper with a K.
Casper with a K, yeah. I wanted to go full-on Irish, but my wife wasn't. She's Scandinavian, so I had to meet somewhere in the middle. I'd have gone with, like, Gabriel Joseph Patrick O'Leary, but, you know, what can you do?
And you celebrated your 50th birthday.
Right.
Sorry, no, just so we're going personal. No,
we don't need to tell too far into this. Yeah, of course.
And how was that for you?
It kind of came and went, if I'm honest with you. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily... I wasn't dreading it particularly. It wasn't that, because I'm sort of very much of the school of it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it, so don't worry about it. But I think it was just a bit of a busy period. So I had dinner with some friends, and I might plan something later in the year, but I just had a quiet dinner and really enjoyed the night, to be honest.
And you and I, we'd be listed as older dads, you know.
Well, yes.
Yeah, yeah. we are, you know, when you arrive to the school gate, it's quite obvious. But so have you got advice on that?
Well, my friend Joe said to me when we were expecting Casper, who's one of my oldest friends, who was an old dad himself, he said, it's not about being an old dad, it's about being a fit dad. dad. So as long as you keep yourself fit and healthy, that's and young at heart, that's the most important.
And that's fit as in physically fit as opposed to fit, you know, he's fit, you know, sort of thing. But that
well, both.
I suppose one is a side effect of the other sometimes, isn't it?
You like to think so.
That's vanity for you. So you're saying you're busy. So you're this morning on Fridays with Alison.
This morning.
And she's going off now and doing the dirt on you with the Great
she's
British Bake Off.
How do
you
with with Noel.
Yes.
It's a love off. So she's doing Bake Off as well. But so with Alison and then obviously Holly. That means the whole team, you know, Craig, who's a lovely guy, and Josie. Yeah. So we're all kind of
Craig Doyle.
Mucking in. And then Radio 2, and then I'm doing some other stuff for Radio 2, and I've got another book to deliver before the end of the year. Right. So, it's pretty full on, but all good.
No, I know you say that 50 came and went, but it is, you know, because it's, I suppose, I don't know, I was just looking at that amazing man today, John Hemingway, who was one of the few, as Churchill used to refer to them, an RAF pilot who fought in the Battle of Britain. He's 104. So by his, you know, calculations, you know, you're middle-aged or thereabouts.
By my own calculations, I'm middle-aged. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, the likelihood is you've probably spent half your life, and that's you're on the way to, you know yourself. But anyway, you take stock. You take stock, don't you, of your life.
But it's strange. You do it at the strangest times. You don't do it when you think you're going to do it. You always do it when. Like a quieter moment, but the idea of kind of having the time to kind of have an amble or have a proper think about it has never really occurred to me, largely because there's nothing you can do about it. So it's all kind of, don't get me wrong, I think you get to 50 and you do think, well, what do I want out of the next 20 years? That's for sure.
And what was the answer? What was the answer?
But I'm still looking for the answer.
Oh, yeah, right. No, because I'm just thinking, you know, like X Factor, huge, shiny floor. And you did it so well, so brilliantly.
Thank you, mate.
It appeared effortless. And that's, of course, that's because you put all the work in and you're just brilliant at it.
Thanks, Ray. That was 12 years of my life. So when it, 12-ish, I think. So when it ended, yes, I felt kind of sad because there's a lot of people that worked on that show I won't see again, and it's definitely, it was a great buzz, but at the same time, you know, I'm not a great one for looking back because there's kind of no point. Like I love a sit down dinner with people that I haven't seen for a while and we reminisce on old times, but I think that, you know, not that I'm old, but like I look at my dad who's 80, who I just spoke to about half an hour ago, and you know, my dad's still got a curious mind, and he's still, you know, he's not myopic, he's looking outwards, and I, you know, he's 80 years old and I love that.
Yeah.
I was swimming in the sea with him 2 weeks ago, you know, and
down at Curraghclough Beach.
That's the most, well, to be fair, that was over in Italy, so
it was
a lot easier swim. but we had a great, he was still diving in off a boat, so, you know, I think that's the most important thing is, you know, is keep curious.
But your parents have moved back to Ireland.
Oh, yeah, they've been back a while now.
Yeah.
And they love it. They're
completely
great
settled in back in Ireland.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are having the best time. I mean, their neighbours are younger than me and my wife. So, I mean, the amount of times I call my mum and I'll get a missed call or she'll get a missed call and I think, she's, you know, probably out for the night. And then I'll get this message the next day, listen, I'm so sorry. We went round Joel and Maria's house next door and then before you know it, the fire was on and the sing-song started and I didn't get back till 3. And I'm like, you're having a better life than I am.
But isn't it lovely that they
were
able...
Which is the way it should be.
Isn't it lovely they were able to come back, though, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I would imagine a lot of people want to do that and can't for whatever reason.
Yeah, and also I think a lot of people are understandably quite scared too, and they don't necessarily think there might be anywhere for them. And I think you have to come back by your own terms. Mm. I think it's a really interesting... I don't know how much it's talked about in Ireland about the diaspora coming home, but it's something, it's a conversation that kind of should be had and should be made as easy for those people as possible. Because, you know, for the likes of you and me and the younger generation, you know, it's a hand luggage,
trip,
a couple of hours trip.
There's
you know?
A lot more
but
going
for
on
some
when
people,
you're, yeah.
For some people, it was, you know, that's what we do so well at London Irish Centre is you work with so many people that both young and old, but a lot of the older people, it was a trip that they knew they were never going home to, which kind of sounds surreal to a younger generation, but that was the way it was. Yeah. It is.
Final quick question, because we're only 10 seconds, Dermot O'Leary, and you've been in broadcast, you know all about that.
I do.
Would you like to do this morning full time?
Well, I like where I am because I've you know, it's a, don't get me wrong, I'll answer the call, but you know, but yeah. I'm loving it.
Yeah, okay. Wings of Glory, the new book from Dermot O'Leary. Linus is the Swift and he's the hero. Dermot, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks for being here, mate. Thank you, mate.
Bye now. Bye. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.